Super Talk Mississippi Media Production. From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hello, hello, hello. My goodness. What a nice day. I don't care where you are, where you're listening. The end of April is, generally speaking, a very fun part of the year. Sadly, where I am, it's already summer. So we can talk about 80 degree weather. The good news is there's still temperatures at night that are cool enough to make tomatoes. And I'm happy to announce today that, in fact, my tomatoes have made tomatoes. So this is a very good day for me, and I hope for you and your garden as well. Welcome into the Garden Mama Show. We have so much to talk about. Everybody's got something that's blooming, something that's not, something they wish they knew whether or not to do this or that about. And I'm thinking in this way, moles, white flies, our little friends are starting to show up again. You know, it's a different night when the kitten spends his first night outside because he won't come in when he's called or even when he's fed. He just wouldn't show up. Well, there's always that one. Of course, this morning he came in and announced himself quite loudly and wanted to know where the food bowl was. We laughed at him. The other cats and I were just, you missed it. But the good news is that he did come back safely. When you have a red collar like that one, it's pretty hard to figure that he doesn't belong to somebody and send him home quickly, I think. Trey has been busy. Trey's in with us this morning. So glad, so very happy to see all that. Just beautiful, beautiful blackberries coming along. The flowers are so pretty. If you're trying to determine the difference between native blackberries and, say, dewberries, well, it's kind of tough. But there is a difference, and we can talk about that if you're interested. We can get into that today. We can get into a whole bunch of other stuff. I'm happy to say that I don't know how to report on squash except to say I have one flower. It's this really big deal. You know, here in the squash failure department, which is my world, that is a very big deal. I'm really happy to tell you also that today is a very big day in my world. Everybody seems to have a Winnie the Pooh character that they identify with. Mine has always been Eeyore. And today is Eeyore's birthday. I don't know how we determine this exactly. I don't remember reading that in any of the A.A. Milne books, but perhaps I missed it. I don't know. How old is Eeyore? My goodness. Those books are very, very old. But the point is, why would you associate yourself with one or another of these characters? They are set fairly universal, somewhat stereotypic. But as Eeyore is known for saying, thanks for noticing. And I will tell you that today. Thanks for noticing. This is a radio show. This is a big deal to me, and a really big deal, fortunately, to me. But today is International Marconi Day. Yep, Mr. Marconi, you know, he doesn't just play the mamba. He, in fact, invented the radio, and his birthday was April 25th of, you know, just a few years back, 1874. He did live to be almost 70, which is quite unusual for that time frame. He was a Nobel Prize winner, of course, in physics. But he was the person who invented the practical radio, the wireless telegraphy that we are so happy to be part of today. So if you're celebrating today, you can celebrate Mr. Marconi. And that's really fun. All right, now, let me know what's going on in your world. We've got texts, we've got phone lines, we've got everything in the world. Good morning, Thomas. So glad that you're with us today. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. I've had an idea. This is probably going to sound a little goofy to those of us who probably should know better. I think we should turn over our weed control to the foragers. There's somebody that wants to eat everything that it is in, that is invading my lawn right now. I have false onions, but I also have real onions. So I can feed people with all this stuff. What do you think? There are people who eat chickweed. There are people who make, you know, lots of make foraging a big deal. We talk about that all the time. Sorrel, for instance, the little pink flowered oxalis that you see. The main thing about that to me is that it tastes bitter, but, you know, that's a lot of people like a good bitter. We've just got news this week and found researchers have discovered how it is that we figure out bitter taste, what part of our protein structures do that. In addition to that, fascinatingly enough, it may be, now knowing where it comes from, we may be able to actually find out better ways to help people recover their taste. If we know where the receptors are, maybe we can find something that will work on them. But, you know, bitter is acquired. I think it some people try to put it into the umami world, and it is part of that, but not entirely. So it's just a different taste altogether. Let's see. I planted elephant ear bulbs last year, but they didn't come back this year, even though everything else did. Well, there's a couple of suggestions for why that would happen. First of all, sometimes the elephant ears are slow, and there are at least three different plants that are known as elephant ear. They're alocasias, colocasias, and taro. Taro is the hardiest in my experience, but colocasias are, generally speaking, hardier than the alocasias. It depends on whether they hold their leaves upright or whether they hang them over, okay? The difference in the plants is fairly obvious when you're looking at them, but the difference in their bulbs is not. It's a more subtle difference. There's not a great deal of difference in the temperatures that they can take, but there are conditions that will lead any of those bulbs, maybe not the taros, but certainly the other two kinds of elephant ears, to be very, very slow or to not come up. The first, of course, is that the soil stayed too wet and they rotted. So if that's the case at your place, you can certainly dig up where you know the bulb was and see whether or not it's even still there. Sometimes it will be. Don't plunge right into the middle of where you expect it to be, because if it is there, then you'll smash it and tear it up. But you can go to the edges of where you think it is and dig a little bit and find out if there's still a bulb under there. And if there is, you may want to take it out, let it dry out a bit, and put it into a container so it can go ahead and sprout, and then you can replant it. But if it's mush, then it just got mushed. Now, last year was also record heat in the summer, which should not have bothered elephant ears. Record drought in the fall, though, could have, because they were so lush and so plush and so full of greenery that when the drought hit, I noticed that a couple of the ones in the drier parts of my property didn't have as happy a fall as they usually do. Usually they have big, boisterous leaves, and they last all the way through, but they did not this year. So it's probably wet soil. It could be the impact long-term of drought, or they could just be slow. So that's the elephant ear. That's everything I can tell you about elephant ears, short of looking at the tissue itself. So I do love those plants. Do love those plants. Oh, my goodness. Well, David's got a corn problem. And anybody who's grown corn has probably had this happen at one time or another. There are things that will slice the corn off at ground level. They're called cutworms, the seedlings. And sometimes they take them and pull them back into the soil with them, and sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just cut them off. But the cutworms are themselves living in the soil waiting for you to do this. Well, the way that we get around the cutworm is to take a little cardboard collar and put it around the squash plant at the right there at the base as soon as it's going to come up. Some people will use toilet paper rolls for this, obviously without the toilet paper on them, but the cardboard part. People use all sorts of things for this, but the idea is that you got to get something around the base of that little plant immediately, so that the cutworm can't get around it and get hold of it and cut it off. Now, you can also treat the soil to get rid of the cutworms. It's going to be a granular product. I don't really know exactly what's recommended, what's on the shelf this week, you know, that's recommended, but there will be one that's recommended for that sort of problem. Probably going to maybe be a spinosad, but probably going to be something in another of the categories, but you'll be able to find it. I just hate that. I had a devastating thing like that happen to some seedlings of mine once, and it took me several days to realize that it was cutworms. I was convinced that my neighbor was coming in and tearing up my stuff. that was not true. It was an insect problem. But we gardeners can kind of fill our heads at times, don't we? We get ideas, and that's not the one we thought, but it's something else entirely. Oh, my goodness. How many of y'all are gluten-free? Are there a lot of people that are gluten-free that you know? It seems to be, right? There's a bunch of folks. Well, there's more and more understanding of gluten. I'm kind of fond of gluten, but I like some gluten. I like the other sorts of things that are gluten-free. I don't have a problem with all that. The American Chemical Society, you know how much I love them. When they get started on something, I really am. I'm tickled because the way they write, even in their summaries and their abstracts, they pretty much tell you what they did. And in this particular case, they were trying to create protein profiles. Okay, just hold with me here for a moment. So they extracted proteins from the flour and starch glues that they made in the lab. All right, this doesn't seem to make any sense. I promise you it is going somewhere that makes sense. Then they used mass spectrometry and bioinformatics to try and identify the types and the relative abundance of proteins in the samples. Okay, so then they basically continued to keep developing until they found the actual perfection, the mother lode, as it were, for what bookworms and microorganisms that go along with them can do to the glue in old books over time. We understand that that's part of how they fall apart. But we've never actually tried to understand what was going on other than that it happens, okay? Well, the restorers, the conservators, the people who are trying to figure this all out obviously don't want to go back and put some more glue in there, which they've always had to do, that was going to just be another source of food for the bookworms that either were still there microscopically ready to hatch or were eventually going to come back into an old situation like these. The flour glues are made from the inside of wheat grains, which includes that gluten, which is delicious apparently to bookworms as well as to me. So what they've done now is to make a gluten-free glue, which sounds kind of oxymoronic, and that's why I wanted to bring it to you today. We know that a lot of conservators in this kind of project, the whole point has been to undo the bad conservation that was done, undo the things that were done that were terrible, and leave it so that it could be taken apart again if someone in the future developed a better method. So in some of these cases, some of these books have been held together not actually by glue anymore, but in a kind of a stasis situation, just attached to themselves to wait for somebody to come up with gluten-free glue. And so there we have it. Pretty crazy. But we just didn't know about all this. We've known that people made glue and used it since Egypt. You know, the ancient Egyptians did that. But in terms of finding something new, we've now, the National Library of Medicine Archives have given them the materials to analyze, and they found out that they can hook them together without the gluten, and therefore they don't have a food source. Now I want to know, what are the bookworms going to eat, and what will they be called in the next incarnation of their life?
Maybe the bookworms are just really, they really like sniffing glue.
Oh, you know, I mean, well, see, in that case, I mean, they wouldn't go anywhere.
Because, you know, however long it's been since glue has been in existence, there's probably been somebody in there sniffing glue.
Too. Yeah, so probably maybe the worms entire are, species that have developed.
The worm's mind is crazy.
This is going to be unfortunate.
And then he's got to eat, you know? So the book's there.
The book is there.
Yeah, and
that's great.
Maybe need some psychological counseling to the bookworm. Yeah, maybe that's how we solve this.
I was going to say, would rock and roll help, or would that be, do we need the blues for this one? I'm not sure. Ron in Ocean Springs is making me very happy today. This is in fact one of my very favorite sentiments. I don't know who needs to hear this, but you're a great gardener. That plant really should have tried harder. You know it's true. In some cases, it's absolutely true. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we've got that bitter business going on. Specialized sensors on our tongues. The taste receptors, though, have been a little confused when it came to bitter, and now we're finally putting it together, trying to understand how you do that. Therefore, will give us the opportunity to perhaps make it work better, make it work for people who have lost their sense of taste or who never had one. That is a situation that people do, in fact, have interesting developments going on in the world of science. I like to say that. So many things going on right now in the garden. I'm getting a few blooms on the hydrangea. They're not big, and one is a lace cap, and one is this. These are the ones that one is pink and one is blue, even though they're in the same right next to each other, 4 square feet. Okay, there's no reason for this, but that's how it is. And they were just beautiful. The plants looked devastatingly horrible 4 months ago. So I'm here to tell you that all of this, okay, wait and be patient, wait and be patient. I keep telling you that, and it has worked. It has worked, at least in the case of my hydrangeas. I hope in the case of yours, too. If you have got shrubs, this may not be a good day to tell you this tip. It's important, though. If you planted a tree a year ago and you've still got it staked to the pole or to the strings or whatever that is, you're not doing it any favors. You gave it the support it needed to get through the first year, but now we've really got to toughen it up. And I grant you, with a weekend of, where I am, 30-mile-an-hour winds expected, it's not a great weekend to go and untie a tree, but you might want to begin to perhaps loosen the vines so the tree has a little bit more wave to it, perhaps take off one side. There's you don't have to do it all at one time. But when you realize that you have planted a tree and you want it to be a tree has got to develop its own trunk and stable roots, as well as that pretty canopy that I'm sure it has by now. So give your tree an opportunity to develop that strength on its own. And when you go to fertilize it this year, if it's been staked, don't use too much nitrogen. The nitrogen is what's going to put on more leafy growth at the top. And what you're trying to do with a young tree that has been staked for a year or even perhaps two, I know you left it on there. You can take those off and begin to fertilize with low nitrogen, higher phosphorus. Tree food, generally speaking, will have that kind of measure. But just check your labels to be sure of that. If you're planting trees right now, you know, this is the week that has been Arbor Day across the country, so there are all these stories in the environmental news about go plant a tree. We recognize this is not a great day to plant trees in the Deep South. But if you still got them sitting around, the same way you've still got a bag of bulbs sitting around, better to plant than not. Just be aware that you need to take a few more steps in the right direction to give it that TLC you know that plant is going to want, and it actually deserves. Well, the plant-based world, the solar world, we got some stories about that. We've got your phone calls and your texts talking to Susan about her tree in Renfro. This is going to be fun, y'all. Stick around. It's the Garden Mama Show.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extrahelp.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Do you ever feel like you're in the dark? Well, with a propane generator, you'll never be in the dark again, at least when the lights go out. Enjoy the comfort and safety of knowing you have a propane generator always ready when the electricity goes out. Propane generators assure you'll always have power. Propane-fueled, clean cooking, hot water on demand, warm and consistent heat, and power when you need it most. Why would you choose anything else? Energy for everyone. Propane. Visit mspropane.com. That's mspropane.com today.
A stockbroker looked.
I know a man ain't supposed to cry, but these tears I can't hold inside. Losing you in my life, you see, cause you mean that much to me. You could have told me yourself that you love someone else. Instead, I heard you to dream fine. Not much longer would you be mine.
You know it's true. I love this remark from one of our listeners. I don't know who's left to listen in the Jackson metro area. Everybody and their cousin is at the Minel Master Gardener plant sale. It's the Metro Master Gardeners at Minel Gardens, but I get the point. Always a big one. Now, look, everybody else is having sales, too, y'all, in your area. Go ahead and send us a shout-out. You know, when you send me those flyers, I post them into the Garden Mama group. And I oftentimes also post them into my contacts at Supertalk because a lot of y'all are interested. But then weeks go by, and you don't send them to me again. So the day that happens for the sale, luckily, the Metro Master Gardeners sent that one again 2 days ago. So it hasn't been up floating around for too long. It's not because I'm the hub of all the information. Y'all are just kind enough to send it to me, and I try and turn around and put it back out there. So thank you for all of that. And by the way, enjoy the sale. If y'all see something I need, bring it to me. That's a terrible thing to say to a bunch of people at a garden sale. I was looking over an article from the 1940s, and I found some of the answers to some of the questions that people are asking in the Garden Mama group on Facebook. This is where, if you don't submit a picture about once a month, I come in and answer those questions on the radio. We call this cross promotion, and we hope that it works. So I'm doing a little of that this morning. Also, I love this. I'm fascinated by the whole elephant ear business and spray recovery. This is tough. I've been sprayed by things. I've had some things sprayed before, and I couldn't grow anything in that spot for quite some time. I'm still not real sure what that was all about. But the same writer today who has the elephant ear bulbs that haven't quite come up yet, I did not think about they possibly couldn't come up. But the yard was sprayed by a farmer last spring, and we've already replaced most of the flowers. What can I seed or spread to get the grass back in my yard without a bunch of, and I'll put this in quotation marks, junk grass or weeds? Okay, I don't know what your definition of junk grass is, so I can't really avoid that one. But I will say that if you have a full sun site and you've got, you know, decent drainage, Bermuda grass seed is the fastest, easiest to get to come up in that kind of circumstance. And it's not junk grass, it's Bermuda grass. Go to the garden center, go to the co-op, and get some seed for that space. But on the other hand, if you're trying to replace what was there, I don't know what was there, so I can't help with that. Good morning, Lance.
I had a question for you. If you have an area that's fairly high trafficked,
yeah,
and it was grassed at one time.
That was
now it is not grassed. And the rest of the yard is losing its grass in the back because of the hoof prints of my mini horse while he likes to trot around and retrieve, quote unquote, the bird, the vogel. And so
it's not really a bird, y'all. Yeah, it's a toy.
I got about 20 of them that look like a bird.
Don't get excited.
He does chase butterflies pretty well. But he's, you know, again, no complaints. Is there something, though, that as far as a very hardy grass that you could plant? Probably not. Or going to plan B, when you look at sod, would sodding any of this work?
If you have the sunlight for sod, it works real well. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that you have to keep the dog off the grass for like 3 or 4 weeks.
Okay, yeah.
So that's harder.
Yeah, okay. Build a whole other backyard around the backyard so that the grass, okay.
Thus, how come I originally had a run across the edge of my property, because the dog would literally run a ditch no matter where you put him. He was going to create holes. And so since he was happier all by himself running back and forth, because he was,
but you're honest, I appreciate that.
But it's true, though. Keeping the dog off the space is the hardest part.
But there isn't anything.
There's not a magic cure.
Right.
The thing I have done when I have been hired to repair areas that, you know, people walk where they're going to walk. And then we who own the property don't want them to walk there, so we do something else. And sometimes it works, and sometimes they go right back and walk there anyway, because traffic patterns are exactly that. They're patterns. So I have been part of the effort to loosen the soil in those areas that have been stomped, the compacted spaces. I had to do this once, actually, after somebody had parked a trailer in the front yard of somebody's house for a while. Anyway, go in and loosen that soil up, and then you're basically just feeding and nourishing that part only. Extra water, extra fertilizer, try and get that part to come along and do some growing that it wouldn't do. But again, you got to keep the animal off of it, because that's like trying to tell the deer not to browse. You know, that dog's going to run.
Oh, yeah, and I loved it. I mean, I get so much pleasure watching him do it. So it is devastating to the root structure, to the grass.
He'll get a little bit older and won't do that as much.
I hope not. I love it. He's such a rambunctious rascal. He so much joy in the fun he has retrieving. I mean, he really likes to retrieve. So, you know, you got to let him do it. And we'll be up to, I think we were up to 2 this morning, retrieving, getting after it. He's having a big time, so.
I have a good question that came in on the Garden Mama questions this week. I'm kind of fascinated by this one because I want to know what the impetus was for it. But his friend, you know, we never talk about ourselves. Oscar's friend sealed up a barrel with tar and roof sealer. Now, the barrel has a hole in it, and he's going to drill a couple more holes in it to grow plants in. But is that a good idea? Well, we used to grow in creosote, too, but we don't do that anymore. You know, railroad ties that had been soaked in creosote, we don't do that anymore. If we're going to use them, we put a liner inside the bed. And I have to say that if I was going to use roof tar to seal up something, I would probably put something on the inside of the, just to keep the soil itself and the roots of the plant from coming in contact with that, if it's going to be something I'm going to eat, particularly. So I say it's probably okay. But if I'm going to eat it, I'll probably put some landscape cloth inside of that container. It still drains. It will still, it won't, but it just will be a barrier between the soil and the container itself. The other problem, other question, of course, is did he seal the inside or did she seal the outside? So that would make a difference. My, you know what my biggest concern is about that? In the sun, that thing's going to stink. It's going to smell like roof tar. I don't know. So that would be why I wouldn't think it was such a hot idea. So, oh, my goodness. Well, that's an interesting conversation. Finding all sorts of things in here today. It's not yet. The cicadas are just, the soil is just now getting warm enough. We have just had the first reports from the southern part of the range of the where the soil has warmed up. But I got to tell you, I don't know Forest County. I'm not, they're shown as being there, but that is right there towards the trickle, towards the bottom end of things. So just keep your ears open.
You'll hear them.
We'll see soon. We'll hear soon. We may not see, but we'll hear
when
soon.
When your cats start bringing up something that's going, and you're wondering, what is that? That's the locust.
I know my screen door gets covered with their dead bodies, you know, with their where they've shed their skins. And now that I don't have a screen door, they're kind of all over everywhere. It used to be fairly handy. I could take them easily and get them off. But now that door is gone, look at those beautiful, beautiful lilies. Pretty, pretty.
How long do they last?
Well, let's see. That particular sort, that's an Asiatic lily, they're going to last at least a week. But just like the others, I want to take, you see the stamens go up, they're yellow, and then on top of that are the red globs. Take that off. And if you just pluck those off, you will have a much longer lasting flower. That helps a bunch. They do last a fair length of time. And if it's a multi-branched Asiatic lily, in other words, the same plant has several branches on it, you probably want to take the first flower and put it in the vase and let the others come on. They'll oftentimes bloom better in the second round. Pretty neat. Paula, that might be the cutest kitten I've seen this week. My goodness, that's cute. And they're all cute when they're kittens, trust me. Oh, my goodness. Oh, dear. Here comes the question. What kind of lawn grass can I grow in the shade? The answer is no. Okay. I hesitate. I haven't said this year. So those of you who've listened to me before, get ready. Hold on. You can't roller skate in a buffalo herd, and you cannot grow lawn grass in the shade. Now, if there is dappled sun and it's a well-prepared bed, you may be able to grow carpet grass, which is a clumping grass, which doesn't take quite as much sun. And you may be able to grow, depending on where you are, if you're a little farther into closer up to the top of zone 8 or even into zone 7, fescue is a really good choice. It still doesn't do that well in the shade, but it will do a little better than some other things. What you're looking for in a shady area that doesn't cost very much, and I recognize the appreciation for that. Believe me, I'm the cheapest gardener you know. But there's it's true. You're looking for flats of ground cover. that can then be walked on and also can be cut either with a string trimmer or with a lawnmower. You may find, depending on where you are and what you like the looks of, you may find a little clumping monkey grass that works that way. You may find something like a juga that works that way. But that's what you're looking for. So go and talk with your local garden center, talk to the horticulturist there, or talk to your friends that have similar situations. See what they're growing. You can, generally speaking, get those plants really cheaply, and you won't have as near as big a project, and it will last longer, much longer.
Quick question, yes, regarding the beautiful roses.
Yes,
as
indeed.
We deadhead and get them cleaned up, what are we hoping for if we've seen this kind of, and so many people have got beautiful ones I've seen. And mm-hmm, what are we mm-hmm. hoping for and time frame for, you know, over the next, say, month or two with the roses? And what's best if we had a, like the ones I have up on the screen, the beautiful, full, mm-hmm, mini mm-hmm. heads. Once that kind of gets cleaned up, they're budding again. What's coming next? What should I expect?
It depends on the actual rose itself. If the rose blooms several times during the year, this is the time, once it finishes the first time, you go ahead and take off the flower and a little bit of the stem, go back to a five-finger leaflet below that flower, snip each of those, and it will bloom again within about a month. I have been deadheading the Clotilde Super that I count on as my biggest bloomer, has bloomed, and then the cold blackberry winter froze some of the buds of the second group. So I've cut all that off. But before I even got all that cut off, the next round of flowers has already started popping open. This morning they were just lovely. There are others like Peggy Martin that don't bloom all the way through. And if you need to prune them, if it's a climbing rose and it only blooms once, or only blooms really big once, that you can prune it right after it blooms, and that's the end of it. But the others you can prune each time they flower and get a few more flowers a few weeks later. That's, a lot of people don't like roses. They say that they have, you know, naked stems in the wintertime, you know, because they're not evergreen, or they have thorns, or they have this, or they have that. But when you get ones going that bloom five or six times between April and October, good grief, that's a remarkable plant that makes your life a lot easier and a lot more pleasant. So you don't have to worry about planting six different things.
Same kind of question with the iris, since they have bloomed, and mm-hmm. I've got quite a few nice ones. Once that main stem is done blooming, and
you're
and
done. You're that done one's done. You can cut it down to ground level. That will allow the plant to go ahead and get healthier and happier for the next year.
Fantastic. You should not expect to see that again.
No, but as soon as I say that, yours will put on another flower stalk. So.
Right. If I'm lucky, yeah. But,
you know.
But so once you know it's petered out and it's done, it's time to cut
it
down.
It's time to let that go.
Okay,
because otherwise, it makes seeds. And people who breed irises are looking for that. They make a hard pod where the flower used to be, and that's got seeds in it. But if you do that, then you're really not giving it the opportunity to grow more plant for next year. The energy's got to go one place or the other. And unless you're wanting to breed irises, which, trust me, I don't, you might, but I'm going to cut the flower stem off. And you know, if I let the seed pods form, if I don't realize they've already formed, I might pop that stem off and go paint them, you know, bright orange and put them into a flower arrangement or something just to be a little different. And they are a lovely structure, but I don't need them on the plant. So unless you're trying to become an iris breeder.
No, well, you say breeding iris, I had a question. I've actually had a couple questions this week about propagating blueberry mm-hmm. from the bush.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I'm sure we don't have enough time to go into that. It was just something I wanted to ask you as we go
okay.
through the day, because I'd had a couple of people ask me about that. And I'm like,
okay.
No, I know Garden Mama knows the answer, so I'll bring it up.
I'm mostly fond of tip cuttings taken later in the season. Blueberry doesn't root real well from tender green new growth like it might have on it now, but after it finishes the blueberries, there will be some growth in the summer that is new branch growth, and it can bend a little bit once it gets strong enough to not quite be tender. That part will root. Absolutely. Talking about recovering from the spray, we're going to do that a little bit this morning. We will also, I love that willow that the deer tried to tear up. Leave that branch trunk. It's going to be a magnificent tree when it gets ready. So give it a chance. Got lots and lots of marvelous, wonderful, absolutely terrific, real gardeners, real questions. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Superior. It's more than a name. It's a promise that we make to our customers to provide you the highest quality U.S. farm-raised catfish at your favorite restaurant, your family reunion, or on your dinner table. Hey, this is Steve Azar, and I want to let you know that with Superior Catfish, you know the next bite is as good as the first, time after time, made possible by your friends and neighbors here in Mississippi. Remember, there's catfish. Then there is Superior Catfish.
Huntington's disease is a fatal and genetic disease described as having ALS, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's simultaneously. Join us in the fight against Huntington's disease at the 3rd Mississippi Team Hope Walk on Saturday, May 18th at 9 a.m. at Flowood Nature Park in Flowood. You can learn more by visiting hdsa.org/THWMS.
Optical Tooth.
Bluebird laugh. She can't tell you why. Deep within her heart, you see. She knows all I cry. Just crying. Yeah.
All right, now, you gotta be careful. We don't want to give the producer the big head in there. Andy and his comments on sound effects. Y'all are funny. But I grant you that cicadas being devoured by cats is a marvelous sound effect.
And it happens regularly.
At my house on a regular basis, what can I tell you? Look, the good news is there's no genocide. There's plenty more cicadas, so no problem.
Yeah, you can make, apparently we can make etouffee.
We're working on it.
That does sound like a very South Mississippi,
Louisiana Ocean Springs
thing. I like the creativity.
There's also the truth of the matter, which is that not only do we have our own dictionaries, we have our very own recipe books. And in this case, they're not even necessarily called cookbooks. They're just the recipes that somebody gave you.
This is how you do
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Kind of scary
Try this.
What about this? Wonder if this will work. You know, can we eat that? That's the other. That's the forager question. Well, we don't know yet.
If you fry it, you can.
That is true. Yeah. Many times. Oh, fried ramps. Somebody sent me a picture. You know, the ramps are so popular. That's the early onion that is basically the same thing that we consider sort of a sideways weed. It's not necessarily, we don't plant them here because they grow so rampantly. Not the ramp, but the same sort of plant, okay? And yesterday somebody sent me a picture of the little green onions that they had deep fried, and they were calling them, you know, cuisine de ramp stuff. I should have sent it for the memes on supertalk.tv. But it's so funny to me, just like the people who eat chickweed. We literally spend thousands of dollars every year to get chickweed out of our lawns, and there are people desperately looking for it in the places where it does not grow because it's prized there. And that goes back to a journeyman, you know, an expert is a journeyman far from home. You may not know anything compared to the people around you, but when you get away from here, well, guess what? Nobody knows what you know. It's interesting stuff, y'all. All right, let's talk if we can to Robert in Ripley. Hey, Robert, what's going on today?
Hey, Kelly. I have a follow-up question to Lance's question about the iris.
Mm-hmm.
You said that when the iris has finished blooming, you cut it off at the ground level. Were you talking about the stem that the bloom
mm-hmm.
is on? Or
cut the stem. Just the stem. No, just the stem.
Okay.
And then we're going to feed the leaves.
Then
you're going to fertilize it.
What happens if you do, miss a stroke with the weed eater or something happens and the foliage gets cut off?
Did you used to work for me? Wait a minute. This has happened to me. What? Where did those irises go? Oh, that's where they went. They grew back. They grew back. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
And these things happen.
Question. What time of year is good for transplanting or moving them to a different part of the yard?
Well, that's an interesting question because we traditionally in the garden world, they tell us to do things in the season opposite the bloom. But if you wait if you wait for fall to move irises, it could be 90 degrees or there could be a hurricane or, there's all kind of reasons you might not get them done. So I say anytime after they bloom that the weather is pleasant, go ahead and do it.
Okay.
And then to follow up on that, you know, that's when I did it was what you just said. Mm-hmm. After they bloomed last year.
That's when you moved them?
Then I gave it a little time for them to settle down. Then I moved them before it got very hot.
Mm-hmm.
And then they adjusted into
They're
a pot
lovely.
Versus the yard.
Yeah.
I transplanted it from a yard spot to a pot and made several. And they seem to have, you know, that was okay even through
They're lovely. The flowers have been pretty.
So that's how it worked for me, just what you just said.
Thanks, Robert. What color are your irises?
Yep, thanks.
What color are they?
They are those white ones with a yellow throat. I think you
can
pick
love
them a while
that.
Back.
So pretty.
Yeah.
So pretty. Enjoy. Thanks for calling. Appreciate hearing from you. I had a question in the Garden Mama group from Ann about where to get Siberian irises. I don't know who sells Siberian irises in locally. There's plenty of sources online, of course, but if you want to suggest something to her, by all means, send us a text or send me an email, mamaonair@yahoo.com. And interesting, couple of questions about shade that we will get to in the next hour that came from that. But another plant that we're looking for is pineapple sage. So if you happen to know, if you've seen that, if there's any at the garden sale that you happen to be going to, let us know.
Well, and the elusive grass that grows well with dog and, mm-hmm. and shade, as mm-hmm. Trey said, AstroTurf.
Yeah,
that's
Trey,
the best
Trey has
grass
a consideration
right
for
there.
You. And I'm telling you, pebbles don't even work. Because then they catch them between their little toes and bring them in the house. And that's no good. Because I've known people that tried to do that. It just didn't work. Anyway, Rhett likes gutter gardening. He's right. You can grow pin oaks and anything else in there, which is kind of cool, but it's sort of fun. I like it. And I've also got another question. Let's see. We talked about this. We talked about that. We talked about the other thing. Oh, Amanda and your mayhaws. Oh, they're beautiful. Oh, my goodness. You know, that's the best jelly in the entire universe, but that's just my opinion. Actually, it's just the truth. That's all. So pretty. It's a beautiful, beautiful crop. Glad to see it, and I'm looking forward to hearing that. Oh, I have to thank Brenda. Brenda from Mendenhall went to Savannah to the Hidden Garden Tour, which is one of those things, if you ever get a chance to go, you should go. It's a spectacular event, and she wore the Garden Mama radio show T-shirt, and people liked it. That's so sweet. That tickles me. I'm so happy that you thought of it. Thank you for that. Speaking of mayhaws and going places and one thing and another, I should let you know that next Saturday was the first Saturday in May. Can you believe it? We're already there. And Peaches Patrick and I will be at from 11 to 1 next Saturday at Rivers Market in Byram on Willow Creek Lane. We'll be giving away cool stuff from there. We'll be talking about plants. We're calling this the Yak It Up. I'm calling it the Yak It Up. He thinks it's silly, but I'm calling it that, so that's what it is. And we're going to just be there from 11 to 1 talking about your plants and my plants and everybody else's plants. They got nice plants. They got great products. And I'm probably even some mayhaw jelly. We'll have to look for that. We'll have to see about that. But come and see us. That'll be fun. Paula's daisies. That's so cute. I just planted two daisies this week. And they're different. And I have a name for one and not the other. I'm trying to get the long bloom time by getting the four different varieties. And so far I have three. But I don't know what one of them is. I have to wait for it to bloom. And then I'll be able to tell. Y'all have the greatest. That's such great questions. Fun stuff. Mary, let's see what Mary sent us. Oh, that's pretty. That's really pretty.
She's wondering if mm-hmm. you know what it is.
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. really pretty. I think I know what it is. I have to stare at it a little bit. If it was in a sunnier site, it would probably be easier to tell. Because I think it would have a stronger form. But I will crawl up in the computer and look at it. It looks pretty, though. I like that kind of green block, you know, where you've got a corner of something and you need to have a little shade on that side. So you just let that, whatever that is, come along and take care of the situation. You know, Trey, that reminds me of that old song, you know, if you want to be happy for the rest of your life. Never make a pretty woman your wife. That's been one of my theme songs my whole life, needless to say. But he says, if you want to be happy for a lifetime, be a gardener. And he's exactly right. Talking about the benefits of being able to garden and being able to do the things that we have really, frankly, not made room in our lives for. I've been reading articles this week about I don't even know how I got started on this, but how do we're not reproducing, as they say. People are not having as many children. There's still people who have lots of children. There's lots of people who have one child, but there's a lot of people who don't. And the reasons for that seem to be kind of interesting. One of them seems to be that there's no time in life for the other bits and pieces of stuff. And I think about gardening. I think about if we don't make that kind of time a priority, then it's true. We only meet people in the parking lot somewhere on our way somewhere else. It's not any way to, frankly, run your own life, much less take care of anybody else. Think about it. Make that time. Put it on your calendar, just like you do for the Garden Mama Show. Thank you very much. We'll be right back.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned almost $100 million in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now, he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, Max and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused career jobs and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae at treasury.ms.gov.
Sammy the Shovel here for Mississippi 811, reminding you that April is National Safe Digging Month. The leading cause of harm in residential areas is underground utility damage. And while pipeline operators and other underground utility companies are committed to raising awareness of underground damage prevention, homeowners have a responsibility to ensure safe digging practices too. Mississippi 811 reminds you to call 811 at least 3 working days before any dig to ensure your DIY project is done safely. Listen.
So how do you know?
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal on Super Talk Mississippi.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you very much for being with us on the Garden Mama Show. Did Mike stay on the line with us?
Yeah, I wanted to add two quick comments, though.
Sure.
I want to make.
Right, okay.
So the yard you hate to mow. I love mowing a yard, honestly. So it's therapeutic. And two, to the intro sound, I would love to have like a silhouette of Tom Jones just dancing to whatever music and then just put it over that, because it doesn't matter what music.
That is some kind of obsession with
because
you
he's the coolest dude. I mean, just watching him, you know, groove out to
something. Can we take a vote?
Yeah.
Is Tom Jones the coolest
dude? Well, and he's got the coolest little fro hair, too. I mean, and he's Welsh. I mean, come on. How does all this work together like this?
As a person with a lot of Welsh background, I can tell you that not all of us are enchanted. I think he was fine with me right up until the point where people started throwing their underwear at him.
Yeah,
and at
well,
that point, I have to go, I'm sorry, that's not going to happen.
No, we do have Mike, and he has legitimate questions
well,
and comments,
goodness.
Unlike mine.
Thank goodness. Hey, Mike, come in here and save me. What's going on?
Yes, ma'am. 4 years ago, we installed Sunbelt weed barrier fabric in our vegetable garden.
Mm-hmm.
And we burned 340 4-inch holes for the plants.
Wow.
Spaced 2 feet apart with 3 feet between the rows. Fabric is great for weed control, but the fire ants are getting worse every year.
Yeah.
We've been doing our best to stay organic. We've tried using a product called Come and Get It with mixed results.
Yeah.
The ants feed on the roots of the plants, and they especially love the musk melon.
They do.
And,
they sure do.
Just wondering, you know, we've actually last year we tried some molasses, you know, the dried molasses powder, and I tried sprinkling that in some of the holes for the plants, but that ended up not getting along with the plants, and they didn't come up right. And I'm just kind of
it can be good in some situations and not so great in others. Tell me.
Yeah.
Okay, you're in Lowndes. Okay, I'm trying to think where to get you to look at some
stuff. We're just south of Columbus on the Alabama line.
Right. But I don't know where to tell you who to go look at. What I'm going to tell you though is that there are a couple of ways that this is approached, and one of them you're not going to want to do, which is to take it off and start over again, because here's what's happened: you now have a colony that is actually in really good situation in those beds because they don't have as much rain or as much heat or as much sun, or and it's warmer in the winter, you know, all of those kind of things that the fire ants are crazy about. So the problem is that we have to treat both the mounds where they're, you know, where you can see them eating the roots of the plants is equivalent to the mound, but then we have to treat the whole bigger area. So I want you to go online and read about the Texas two-step fire ant control. This is from the folks at the Cooperative Extension, essentially, you know, Texas A&M kind of, and they have big fire ant problems, but they use spinosad, which is a naturally occurring control product that I use for a lot of stuff. I have real good success with it. I've been using it for years, and they developed a program. What they had found was that as they were, because they would do the baits, and they do the amdros, and they do the acephates, and the things that we all understand you can do, but then when it got into the areas, it wasn't actually controlling the fire ants because they were getting used to it. And I believe that's why they did so much research into spinosad, which benefits those of us like you and me who are into sustainable controls. So check out the Texas two-step and see if there's any of that makes any sense to you. And it's going to involve using the spinosad in the perimeter as well as within the space where the ants actually are. And I don't...
Every time I've tried researching online... For people using weed barrier fabric, I don't find anything, and that's
because you're in a world where I hate to say this because I know all those folks, they don't test it with fire ants because they know what they're going to find that they will have created a good environment for them, and so that's why
I've even called the manufacturer and they said fire ants because they're up in Minnesota or something.
We have no idea. Exactly.
All right. Well, I'll give that a shot.
Okay. Now, take my email.
It's a beautiful garden, but the fire ants are really taking over.
And I'm going to help you get rid of them. Take my email address, mama@yahoo.com. If you don't find something if Texas isn't able to help you with this one, get in touch with me because I got other resources. That's just the one I think will be the easiest to find and understand from the sustainable point of view.
MamaOnAir@yahoo.com.
Yes, sir.
I sure appreciate it, man.
Thank you, Mike. I look forward to hearing from you. I want this to get fixed. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Willie in West Point. Hey, now.
Yes.
You're
yes,
looking, ma'am. You got the Siberian irises that this person's looking for, huh?
I believe they're the purple ones, right?
I don't know. She just wants that particular type. Yeah.
Well, I've got yellow and I've got purple. You know, they just growing like crazy here at my house.
That's wonderful.
I'll get rid of some of them.
Well, I tell you what, will it be all right with you if I get your information from Lance and pass it on to her?
Yes, ma'am.
All righty. Thank you very much, Willie. Enjoy them. I know that anything there's too much of in a garden can get away from you, but I do love those irises.
Growing wild in my backyard in a low spot down there, and then I got some up here next to my house. I mean, they just take over if you don't keep the boat down.
I love it. Thanks, Willie. Appreciate hearing from you today. Yeah, as they say, one man's feast is another. All of that stuff. Oh, my goodness. Back from the text line, I've identified the tree. I believe that is a Photinia cereolata. They do come up from seed in places, and they also do end up getting planted in some places. This probably wasn't the greatest place for it to end up, but it does look like that plant. It's lovely. I'm so glad that the 5,000 sunflowers are going and doing well. More coming up all the time. That's just wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Oh, my goodness. Now I'm going to worry about the fire ants. There's always a fire ants program problem. nice pictures from plant sales here and there. Hello, George. That's fun. That guy sounds like he's been on the radio. You're right, Debbie. Okay, good. It is Photinia, and she drug it up from her grandmother's place many years ago. Thanks. I have a beautiful one myself that I'm very fond of, and that's why once I was able to get a good look at the leaves, even though it's not a real popular tree or a popular shrub, it is one that I like, and I'm glad you did too. We're all, Mike, by the way, in Lowndes, everybody's weighing in. They think you should be on the radio because of your voice. We all like that voice of God stuff, you know. We enjoy it very, very much. Now, Trey, those are the prettiest marigolds I've seen in a very, very long time. That's just beautiful. I love big, tall marigolds for cut flowers. I realize they have a certain smell, and not everybody likes them, but I think they're beautiful. They're just beautiful. Rhonda asked a question about mulberries for cooking, and can you eat mulberries? Well, mulberries are one of the things that we do enjoy as one of our fruits, but it's like everything else. If you're going to go pick them and it's not your tree and you didn't grow it, you need to know what's been done to it. You need to make sure that it's, first of all, okay for you to be there, and second of all, that the flower, the plant, whatever it is that you are in effect foraging, is something that that you do recognize it, that you do know what it is, and that it has not been sprayed with something that you don't want to eat. So, or frankly, rolled over by a truck. Sometimes that'll ruin the flavor, if nothing else. So think about it. Looking at tomato plants today. When we look at supertalk.tv, and I really do encourage y'all to pop there, get the app on your phone, or, you know, whatever you want to do, jump on your computer. We're able to do some things there that we can't do necessarily with just my voice. And I do describe things. I'm pretty good at it. Been doing this for a while. But it is nice to also see those images. And it's kind of fun, I think, to see what everybody is sending things in, what we're all looking at, because we're all appreciating some of the same things as well. Talking about what to grow in wet areas and shady areas. Tough, those are such tough questions. A shady vine to grow in a shady area. There's a bunch of things that can fill that particular bill. Asiatic jasmine can be trained up. Any of the clematis, but particularly the autumn clematis, can grow in the shade, and it will bloom really nicely as long as it's getting any sun at all. It's also true, though, that if you're growing a vine in the shade, and what you'd want is a little leafage, but you'd just as soon get some flowers up higher up, maybe when they can make it to the sunlight, you can do Carolina jasmine, you can do trumpet vine. They're both beautiful plants and things that will surprise you at how easily they grow. My favorite, though, for any circumstance where there's just a little bit of sunlight, all the way up to where there's a fair amount, is coral honeysuckle. And it's not the wild honeysuckle that was imported from Japan that we really wish they hadn't, even though it's a lovely vine. It has taken over way too many places. But if you can give yourself the opportunity to look for coral honeysuckle, I think you'll be glad of that one. Okay, talking about what to grow in a wet area with afternoon sun, I'm going to say cast iron plant, shield ferns. Depending on how wet it is, you could probably even get some hostas, maybe some Louisiana iris in that circumstance, because they can take late afternoon sunlight. Oh, my goodness. All of those kittens. Good grief. They're so cute. That's so cute. Let's see. Charlie and Brenda in Clarksdale. Hey, y'all. Soil recommendations for a 12x4 raised bed for tomatoes and vegetables. Well, it's going to be basically my recommendation for raised beds for flowers or for vegetables or for whatever you want to grow in a raised bed. And I do want you to use about a shovel's depth of your native soil. You're in Clarksdale. There may be some better soil. You may want to use a little more than that. But you want some of the native soil, and then you want a couple of different kinds of organic matters. Some kind of composted material, might be gin trash. If it's real old, might be the bottom of your compost heap or the bottom of a leaf pile, might be a bagged product. All of those are perfectly appropriate. And then one other one, a soil conditioner or a ground bark, something like that, that's a little bit larger particle, because what you're trying to do is to build something that can in turn maintain itself as a well-drained bed and also have lots of room for the microorganisms to come in and do some of the nutrition for you, provide some of that. As you give it some, they'll give it a whole lot more. They'll make your roots work better. You're also going to use a little bit of garden lime in this bed because you want to make sure that you're not getting it too acid. Our woodland products, our organic matters, oftentimes do tend toward the acid, as do our native soils in many cases. So we want to add some lime when we build the bed. I'm going to tell you, I could give you the exact number amount, a cup to 30 gallons, but that, 30 gallons of soil takes about a cup of lime to change the pH in 6 months. All those, I can tell you all that, but what I'm going to tell you is when you build your bed, sprinkle lime on top of the native soil, just like you would do back when we used to put sugar on cereal. So it's a fair coating, but it's not a mound. It's just a sprinkle all the way across it, and then put your other organic matters in. You can also, if you would like, you can fertilize the individual plants when you plant them, or you can fertilize the whole bed with some kind of organic nitrogen just to help the whole process get going. Then in that case, you'll use a little bit less nitrogen going forward. So what you're doing is you're using your native soil, you're going to add some lime, and then you're going to add at least two different kinds of organic matter, mound it up like a big loaf of bread, and off you go. You'll be planting in 3 weeks, or even a little sooner, perhaps. I do love building all that. If you want details about that particular soil recipe, I'm happy to send it to you, mamaonair@yahoo.com. Okay? Okay. We've gotten to the end of this list and the end of that list. My goodness, y'all bring a lot of lists today. All right, now, I have this for you, Lance. Today is Tell a Story Day. We all tell a story, don't we? Don't we just about always, we like to weave a tale. If I talk to you about my plants that are doing well, I also want to tell you about the ones that didn't. I'm not necessarily making it up, but I'm also not reporting in a factual, forward fashion. I'm telling you a story. I'm bringing you information from point A to point B in a narrative fashion. Okay, that's all that means. Doesn't mean go tell a lie. My grandmother was very famous for telling, if you don't tell me a story. She didn't want that. And what she meant was, of course, don't tell me anything that's not true. Perennial herbs have been on everybody's mind. I was happy to put up in my social media yesterday evening the blooming thyme, and I do love that. I know a lot of people don't feel like thyme is good when it's flowering, but I actually like it. I think it has a delightful flavor, and it can actually be, I'll cut the flowers off when the whole container blooms and dry them just a little bit and then make a tea, which is real delicious. Or, of course, you can put them into cook with just like you would any other kind of thyme. But the others that do well in containers long-term for really perennial herbs, to me, the very best are oregano and some thyme. I have three or four different pots of thyme at different times. Different times. But you can also do, if you're prepared to protect it a little bit in the winter, you can grow lemongrass that way. You can certainly grow rosemary in a container. There are a lot of our perennials and things that we can make perennial that we can very much enjoy how we're doing with all of that, at one time. Jack is in, let's go to Utica. Good morning, Jack. What's going on?
Morning. Well, we have perennial sunflowers. We have the Maximilian. We have the narrow leaf sunflower. We have the hairy leaf sunflower. And these are perennials, of course. Mm-hmm. I want to know at what point you would pinch them off. I mean, how high would you let them get? I know if you pinch the tips, they'll branch out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a pincher now. And Joe Pieweed, Clara Curtis Mums, and yes, even your perennial sunflowers. I did, however, once pinch that the Helianthus angustifolia. I did once pinch it so many times that it turned into a ground cover and almost ate my yard. So, yeah, I mean, that year it was big and beautiful, but you didn't want that. That was not attractive. I'm going to pinch at the point where we've got maybe a couple of feet on them, and then I might pinch again in June. But I'm going to stop after two pinches. I want them to all bloom abundantly in the fall, and I don't want them to have to spend so much time putting on leaves and flowers that they get missed. We get early winter or something. But
I don't pinch them generally after July.
Yeah, you can go right up to July 4th, but I don't think it's necessary after that. And I think you need to get in two pinches if you want to control them at all. Though have you ever grown Joe Pye weed? Joe Pye has that same characteristic.
Funny you should mention it. I'm in my yard right now, and I just got a little clump of Joe Pye weed in the mail, and I planted it, and I was just about to check on it, and It's not doing anything. So
I love that plant.
You know, that last cold spell really knocked.
Was tough for a lot of stuff. The clock is taking me away from here. You can hang on, but you can also send me an email. We'll keep talking. Thank you very much, Jack, in Utica. We'll be right back.
Against my will, way down south, I kissed girls and I shot squirrels out behind my house. I learned a lot about this world way down south.
The Huntington's Disease Society of America South Region is hosting the third annual Mississippi Team Hope Walk, Saturday, May 18th at 9 a.m. at Flowood Nature Park in Flowood. Huntington's disease is fatal and genetic, described as having ALS, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's simultaneously. Join us in the fight against Huntington's disease at hdsa.org/THWMS.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
If you're injured... I told you he could dance to any music.
I hardly ever fall apart on the radio, and now you've done this. It's been a long time. I'm not going to be able to stop laughing. See, this is what the future holds, folks, is multimedia in your face all the time. That's where we want to be, and that's what we're doing. So if you're at supertalk.tv, you just had a little... That was not Lance dancing. I promise. Good grief. You can do so many things with technology, and it is so much fun to be part of the exploration. It's a joy. It's a great, great time. Really good question. Thank you so much, my friends in Clarksdale, about the plant and sweet potatoes in containers. They immediately turned yellow. Okay, part of that's transplant shock, but part of that is also a real simple thing. You need some soluble fertilizer. And by that, I mean the stuff that you mix up in water and pour on the plants. It doesn't matter, really. You're going to need 20, 20, 20, 10, 10, 10. There are organic formulations, sustainable formulations. There's Miracle-Gro. There's Scott's. There's Peter's. There's all of those. Schultz. I even have had Schultz in my life. But you need a soluble fertilizer at this particular point to boost them and get them to go ahead and green back up. You will probably want to actually put the fertilizer on them, and then actually spray the leaves, too. Okay? Okay. I think that's a good place to start. And one more, how to make that knockout rose bushier, Joe in Madison asks this morning. Joe, I tell you what, there's a couple questions. If it's in full sun, then you've got a leg up on getting it to be bushier. If it is, frankly, as much as 4 feet tall, cut a foot off of it. We're going to push it. We just take a little bit off of that knockout rose, but the doubles do grow a little bit differently than the single flowered ones. So I'm going to go ahead and take off a bigger chunk of it, fertilize it, keep it watered, keep it mulched, and see if we can't get some new growth to push out from the bottom, the lower ends of those branches. Generally speaking, those buds will pop out and you'll get a bushier plant. And that it does work that way a lot of the time. We hope it will work in this case. Faye in West Point, let's talk about lemons.
Yes. Last year I had quite a few lemons, and I said, okay, I'm just going to take these seeds. I'm going to put them in a big pot, and if they come up, they come up. If they don't, they don't. Well, they didn't come up. They didn't come up. Finally, after about, it seems like a month or so, they finally come up. I ended up with like 25 little plants. And so, I would let them grow, and I kind of pick and chose them. And so I have 8 now that is about... 12 to 14 inches tall. One of them got real leggy, so I just cut the top of it out, and mm-hmm. so it's bushed out a little bit more. I'm going to put like two or three of these in the same pot. Is that a no-no?
No, that's fine.
I don't want to put every one of them in a single pot because I don't have that kind of space.
I understand.
And I know they don't get big anyway.
Three of them in a container that's a maybe 12 inches across at the top and equally deep. It may not go forever, but you can certainly go 4 years before you'd have to do something about it.
Yeah, can get started on it.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. Okay. Taking care of them. Fertilizer. Excuse me.
I like a citrus food, and the thing I'm going to tell you to watch for is that if any thorns develop on these plants, then you're not going to get necessarily a sweet lemon. Just be aware that you may, but you may not, because the seedlings are going to be different. But citrus food is actually what is better for these things. It has a better balance, and it also, frankly, lasts longer than other things that we might put on them.
Okay. All right, well, you know, I mean, I'm really not doing them for lemons. I mean, I'll take the lemons. I'm not saying that.
No, but to make a pretty tree, you want to give it what it needs to grow into a good tree.
Yeah.
So
that's exactly right.
Probably 4 years from now, you'll have to divide them and move them around, you know, because they'll get too big.
Yeah.
But I think you can do that. I think it'd be lovely. I love citrus as a houseplant. It's just a pretty evergreen thing, you know. It's really a pretty plant.
As they are getting taller, do I tip them back to make them the stem stronger, or am I just going to let them keep on continuing just to get
no? Taller? I would trim when I grow citrus, and I've never grown one from I have grown them from seed, but that was for cuttings. That was to get greenery. It wasn't for growing them into lemons. But yes, I'm going to nip them. I'm going to tip the tops every time they bother me or that they get wimpy or something, because all you're trying to grow is a nice green leafy pot.
Yeah. All right. And I put these in my windowsill in my laundry room, which gets good sun. What do I do for them? Do they need to be in the sun out, like on my patio right now, in the shade part?
I would say after you get them, after you get them into their big container and give them a little time to get accustomed to themselves, then yeah, you could put them out in the shade outdoors. They stay there until time for frost in the fall.
Okay, but in the shade.
Yeah, I'm not going to, not immediately into the broad sun, because they've been in a sheltered environment. But certainly, as the summer goes on, you may find that they would rather be not in the full sun, or you may find that they're doing great and you can move them out. Yeah. But I'd let them tell you that.
Yeah, I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. I look forward to this project. That's a good one. That's fun. That's really a treat. That's let's see now. Y'all are worrying about that. We got other stuff happening over there. I talked about propagation in the newsletter this week. I'm not going to get deep into it, but I do want you to know that I do talk about these things. I don't just tell you about the plants that I like and the ones that are dying, but all of those things are true, too. This was this was inspired by a column that I used to write for a growth regulator people. And I wanted to explain what we're talking about when we talk about plant hormones. Now, everybody who's ever been a teenager, everybody who's ever been a human being, everybody who's ever grown to a certain age, we all know about hormones, right? But in plants, they're just as important, and in some cases more so. It's not all mood swings. It's oftentimes just about the development of the plant. But I want you to hold on to these four words and just keep them in your head, because as we talk about hormones, we talk about different ones. The auxins, the cytokinins, the gibberellins, and the ethylene. Okay, just put those words in your head, and we'll get to them as the time goes by. But if you're looking for information about propagation and you want to know how things root, why they root, I'm your person, and some of these are the beginnings of the knowledge that you will want to have for that. Let's see. Paula wants to know about growing cilantro. You know, that's really funny. There seems to be two exact different points of view about that. I tend to plant it along with my parsley, but it bolts differently from the parsley, so it's a little bit harder to do. We have a harder time keeping it through the winter sometimes, but I do try it a couple of different times. The people that I know who grow it tend to grow it from very early spring until be harvesting it like now, but I don't know that that's necessarily what the cilantro wants. It might just be when they have space for it. Oh, this is nice. You got them in the ground. They were too wet. Okay. And Kathy, this is Kathy. She says that she knocked off as much as she could and put them in good soil. Yeah, no, I think you can replace. I think they'll be okay. You can replace them if you want to or plant more. But they look to me like they're going to make it. When they were too wet and now you've let that situation recover, I think you're going to be fine. Oh, my goodness, he survived, y'all. Peaches has been to the Master Gardener sale. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. It's like it's going to be a warm one, but
yep,
you know.
Yep. Well, and everybody's having plant sales all over the state, so I'm really tickled that you got to that one. That's always a good one. Minel Gardens is one of my favorite places anyway.
Yeah, I didn't get to stay long. I was running a little behind. But that's okay. I got a few hugs and ran into a few really fun people, as you see.
Of course. Those pictures were great.
Got a big day planned.
Well, that's wonderful. We got a big day planned next Saturday.
We do.
We will be going. You'll be here at 9, and then we will take off and go from 11 to 1 down to Rivers in Byram. I'm not sure. I don't know what the giveaways are going to be yet, but you know, we've always got cool giveaways. So there's going to be some giveaways both 11:30 and 12:30. We want y'all to come and stick with us, and we're just going to yak it up.
You know, and it's not about the giveaway. It's about the company, right?
Exactly. Because everybody, you know, this time of year, everybody's looking for a good reason to go see one more plant, go talk to somebody about what's growing and what's not. And that's all we're going to do. That's what we're about. It's all about yakking it up and talking about our plants. Trying really to see what everybody else is doing as much as what we're doing. And that's kind of fun, I think.
It's a lot of fun. You can learn a lot when you get around a bunch of gardeners, that's for sure. You should have seen the mob at Minel.
Well, tell me this. What was the plant that everybody wanted? There's always one or two that everybody's looking for.
Gosh, there was so much now.
good. What did you get?
Missouri, I didn't get anything. I don't need any plants right now. I'm
oh, that's
to get
funny.
What I've got planted.
That's funny.
I saw Missouri primrose, Ontheria. I saw more variegated Japanese knotweed.
Oh, fun!
And
for those of y'all who have ever grown knotweed and wished you could get rid of it, the variegated one doesn't spread as much. It's like variegated jewels of opar; they don't spread as much. So,
well, you know, I kind of like. Not aggressive. I like vigorous plants because then you have some to share and you can move them wherever you want.
Well, I'm going to leave you with this. Next Saturday is May 4th, and we will be at Rivers in Byram from 11 to 1. Do you know what next Saturday, May 4th, also is? And I know this is why you picked this day.
It's National Peach Day.
It's World Naked Gardening Day. Next Saturday.
No. You set me up.
No, I'm telling you, that's what's next Saturday. We have it every year, but next Saturday is, in fact, World Naked Gardening Day. I don't usually go out on World Naked Gardening Day, but I'm going to be with you, so we'll have some fun.
Okay.
Thanks,
maybe
dude.
I need to go find me one of those Muscle Man t-shirts to wear.
Oh, my goodness. That's kind of scary, but maybe so. Maybe I can be a mermaid. We'll see.
You have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks. That's fun. We will have a good time. I will be clothed, I promise. Good one, Joe. Can you provide several names of partial shade shrubs for the backyard? Here's the deal. We can grow almost all the ones that they say you want for full sun in some less sun than that. And we can also grow some of our ones like hydrangeas as long as we've got a couple of 3 or 4 hours of light coming into the area, dappled sun slanting in the morning or those kind of things. So in that partial sun situation, partial shade situation is just so perfect for so many of our shrubs. I'm going to tell you a couple of natives that you need to look at. Strawberry bush. There's always another version of our friends in that world that are going to be beautiful. So don't miss the hydrangeas. Don't miss the native shrubs. And frankly, don't overlook things that you might not expect to be that good in that setting. Things like pittosporum. I'm really a big fan of pittosporum. Its flowers smell like oranges, and it's a lovely, different-looking shrub that can take a setting like that. Wes in Mantee, hello now. What's going on?
Hey, Mama, how are you doing up there?
Very well, thank you.
Okay. I'm having to cut back this year. I had open-heart surgery about 13 weeks ago, so I only got about 60 tomato plants to put in the ground.
Well, that sounds like about enough, Wes. I hope you're doing well otherwise.
I'm healing pretty good. But anyway, I got about 610-foot rows of multiplying onions.
Oh, my goodness.
And I've saved sets before, but I've never tried to start any from seed.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just loaded with seed right now. I didn't know if they need to dry longer, go all the way to June, or exactly what.
You know, it's interesting. The seed need to dry on the plant in order to survive and make seed that are viable. So if you want the onions underneath to be happy, you're going to cut the seed pods off and dry them someplace else. Okay, because the two things are counterproductive. Going to seed doesn't... Tell you what, hang up and I'll tell you. Okay? The thing about onions when they go to seed is that they are trying to make seed. That can be great. But if you want the onion plant itself to be the stronger part of this, go ahead and cut that stalk off when those seeds form. Don't let them go all the way to brown. But when the seeds have formed in that flower head, go ahead and cut it off. Turn them upside down, hang them up, and let them dry into something that they can drop their seeds into, like a brown paper bag. That's really the best way to gather those. You don't want to leave them on the plant at the same time that you're trying to grow the plant, because the two things don't do as well together. It's the same thing as irises. If you want to grow seeds for irises, okay. But if you're trying to grow the plants, separate the seeds from them just as soon as you can. Good questions today and so much fun. We're going to have a really good time. All right, now, stick around. Thank you, Paula, for that nice comment. We'll be right back.
Sammy the Shovel here for Mississippi 811, reminding you that April is National Safe Digging Month. The leading cause of harm in residential areas is underground utility damage. And while pipeline operators and other underground utility companies are committed to raising awareness of underground damage prevention, homeowners have a responsibility to ensure safe digging practices too. Mississippi 811 reminds you to call 811 at least 3 working days before any dig to ensure your DIY project is done safely. Listen to Sammy. You dig?
Do you ever feel like you are in the dark? Well, with a propane generator, you'll never be in the dark again, at least when the lights go out. Enjoy the comfort and safety of knowing you have a propane generator always ready when the electricity goes out. Propane generators assure you will always have power. Propane-fueled, clean cooking, hot water on demand, warm and consistent heat and power when you need it most. Why would you choose anything else? Propane. Clean American energy. Visit mspropane.com.
Hello, my name.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been in his octopus's garden in the shade. I'd ask my friends to come and see.
Sometimes you just have to let Ringo sing, you know.
I'd like to be
bum bum. All right, endosperium. Oh, endosporium, endosperium, whichever one it is. I keep getting these pictures. Y'all are blowing up my text at my own neighbors, as well as here. The picture came in earlier. There's leaf spot, and then there's leaf spot, and then there's leaf spot. And when you have Indian hawthorn plants that have leaf spot, you are looking at a very common problem. You may remember that there used to be a plant everywhere. Now it's only in some places, but it used to be everywhere, called red top photinia. Red top photinia gets a leaf spot on the bright red new growth, which is the highlight of the plant. The good news is that every time you shave that off, you know, take your clippers and clip off that red growth, it comes out again and is red again, but it also continues to get the leaf spot. Same thing happens with Raphiolepis, with the Indian hawthorn. But the problem is the Indian hawthorn does not respond to pruning in that way, because the leaf spot gets all over the plant, not just on the new growth. So what are you going to do about it? Well, you have two choices. First of all, you can plant resistant varieties, and there are some. There's a Clara that's white, and there's quite a few pink ones, but there's new ones every couple of years. You can talk to the folks at your garden center or your landscaper about which ones will work for you if you need to replace them, or if you are planting Raphiolepis or Indian hawthorn now. If you are planting them, don't plant them where there's bad air drainage or bad soil drainage. Wet feet and still air all the time really do make this problem much greater than it would be. The other thing to understand is that if you like the way it looks, don't let anybody tell you to leave them alone. The leaves turn kind of weird red and they fall off eventually. I'm going to say this is one of those perfect situations for the lights that you drop on that cover the shrub, you know, because Raphiolepis are oftentimes planted in mass. And when they get ruined, you may not want to replace them. You may just want to decorate with them. I get that. I'm not going to complain about it. Prettiest ones you'll ever see, though, are oftentimes in a fairly shaded but not deeply shaded neighborhood, and they're in the median, because they've got great drainage, they've got morning sun, and they're not crowded up around a bunch of other plants. So Indian hawthorn has this good quality. If you're growing it and it's got leaf spot every third year, you should know that if you will begin in the same way that we spray dogwoods and Japanese maples, if you will begin a fungicide program as soon as the new leaves get on in the springtime and spray it several times as the new leaves are coming on, you can inoculate it for that particular year. The weather conditions any given year will bring it on or make it worse, but you can forestall it if you know you've got the problem. On the other hand, you can pick another variety and not have the problem in the first place. That's a really pretty chimenea. I like the choices. Dark-leafed wax begonias, a little pretty little variegated ivy vine. I think that's going to do beautifully in there. It's a question about shade and stuff. It looks good. Those are good choices. I like it. One of the things that is going on at my place is the complete and total disregard for what's tropical and what's not. I have found myself with a bunch of plants to plant. I am planting sun patience this summer. All my zinnia seeds have come up in their little seedlings. There's going to be a lot of them. Some of them are going to be perennial. Some of them are not. It's just going to be crazy. And I like that. But I was trained in horticulture. I went to school for it. So I know that those two things can't forever grow next to one another. The annual has to come out and the perennial will have to be dug and divided later on. I don't care. I'm going for height, I'm going for color, and I'm going for flower shape. And if I'm combining those things that way, that's how I end up with a purple petunia and a yellow dahlia in the same container with some coleus that don't have either one of those colors in them. But I like the way it looks. They're friendly together. Do this for yourself. Do what you like. Gardening is not supposed to be a competitive sport, although it certainly is nice when your flowers are prettier than the neighbors, but only you need to notice that, and maybe your close friends. But if you are growing things, you're going to feel better about them. You're going to feel better about yourself. And, yep, there's a lot of things in this world that you can't do a thing about as an individual human being. But you can take care of that begonia. You can mow that lawn. It's another case where you can get finished with something. It's a job that a lot of things don't have any finish to them. But if you're mowing your yard, you know when that gets done. And you get to go put the mower up, and you get to hang up your hat, and you get to say, I finished that today. And that's a good thing. The same thing is true of growing the vegetables. When you bring the vegetables to the table, when you bring in the thyme and add it into your cooking, when you grab a piece of rosemary for that roast beef, you really have a better experience of it because you did it. And as we move into this world of greater amounts of technology and greater availabilities, yeah, a lot of times we do end up having things that, you know, we can just look at them. We don't actually have to do them. We can consider them. We can read about them. We can look at other people doing stuff. That doesn't change you getting up, moving yourself, and doing things yourself. It still has to be you. I don't know whether it's growing that plant or maybe you're going to wash your car today or maybe you're going to go pet the kittens, you know, whatever it is, you can't do it all online. You have to do it in your life. And that's why I think gardening is such an important thing to me. I see it in myself, but I see it in so many other people too. There's whole curricula called horticulture therapy. It's a real thing, but it's all about building your own ability to deal with the world because you have successes. And if you have successes with growing a plant, or if you have challenges that you meet, or if you have ones that you can't quite get there to, you're occupying your mind with things that are healthy. You're thinking about stuff that makes sense, and you're thinking about stuff that has an actual end point, and that is to grow the plant. So there's a lot of those things. You know, it's a real interesting world that we are in, and sometimes we would like to have a little bit more control of it. Joe would like to know, he's going to control this one. He's got a very leggy clayera. You can cut that thing. In fact, I have cut mine down entirely, and it is now a lovely shrub. I didn't want it anymore. I cut it down and dug it up, and it's really very pretty. Still don't want it, but there it is. But yeah, you can cut those. Those evergreens, all that kind of stuff, evergreens and ligustrums and clayeras, all of these can be cut back. Now, if you did it 2 months ago, that's fine. You're still trying to get them to be bushy or they're still too big. You can cut them back again, and you can cut them back again in June. After that, I'm going to say stop, because after that, we end up with new growth that can be a problem. If, you know, if the weather changes, if it gets very, very hot, it can get crisped. If it gets very, very cold soon, it can not be as healthy next winter. But you can cut those back pretty severely all the way till June. I have no problems with that whatsoever. Okay, and I think you'll be glad you did. There are so many new things in this world. I will eventually get to them, but I wanted to tell you that perhaps the coolest thing for me that's come onto the horizon now, researchers have developed an organic photovoltaic film that is both waterproof and flexible. So we can put that solar cell right there on my bathing suit, and off we go. What do you think? And now there's a picture for you. Whatever you're doing this week, I hope it has a whole lot to do with your garden and a whole lot to do with kindness. Stick around and take care of yourself. Take care of your friends. Come back next week for this one.
Super Talk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extrahelp.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned almost $100 million in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now, he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, Max and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused career jobs and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae at treasury.mms.gov.
Hey.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.